Are you tired of the same boring and unhealthy diet of corporate media propaganda and the distraction du jour? Your antidote is here at Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Real, revolutionary, and relevant news and talk with fascinating and brilliant guests. Prepare to be informed and motivated with your friend and host, Cindy Sheehan.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. Our guest today is comedian, political satirist, Barry Crimmins. Barry used to work for Air America. He used to write for them, and he now is the subject of a movie by comedian filmmaker Bobcat Goldthwait called Call Me Lucky. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back with my friend, Barry Crimmins. Barry Crimmins, welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Thank you, Cindy. What a treat and honor it is to be here and to be speaking with you.
It really has been quite a while, and I'm so happy to finally get you on Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I've only been on the air for 6 years, so it's great to get you back on.
I'm patient. I'm not a great self-promoter, but I'm thrilled to be on with you and you know, to be on the air with you or stand with you anywhere. And we've had some practice at that in the past.
We sure have.
It's great to be talking to you, and I'm glad that you have this this podcast, which I listen to.
We reconnected on Twitter a while back, the filmmaker, comedian filmmaker, and by the way, very sweet person with a very awkward name, Bobcat Goldthwait.
Yeah.
Very awkward. Directed a film about your life. So I was very honored and excited to be interviewed for it. I think the best thing besides helping you out and being part of this documentary was I got to meet the guy who is the voice of SpongeBob SquarePants.
Oh, Tom Kenny. I discovered those Bobcat and Tom came into my show in my hometown at Skaneateles. Skaneateles is an Indian word that means beautiful lake surrounded by fascists. And, they came into the show, and they were like 15 years old, and they were hilarious, and they had kind of a biting sense of humor. It was very funny for how young they were, but they are also still worried about prom dates, so it was very cute. And then they went on, and, you know, thank goodness I was nice to them, because, you know, that seems to be the whole story of this film, and a lot of what's going on lately is, well, thank goodness I was nice to that guy when he walked into the club in 1979. So,
right. Well, you were probably just being yourself.
But, you know, maybe.
So, it wasn't something like really unusual that happened. Well, I want to tell you, my grandmother's stock rose way high when I met SpongeBob. And my grandkids are just like, every time we watch that movie up, they say, Gigi knows Carl. Because I know Ed Asner, so they're like really, they're in awe of their grandmother who knows these cartoon characters. So Barry, the film is called Call Me Lucky. And why is it called that before we get into, I really would like to know how this came about and what's the title about?
Well, Bob wanted to make a movie, a narrative film about me. And then Robin Williams, who's Bob's best pal, wanted him to, you know, suggest to me. Anyway, Bob had me write a script, and it was this crazy, you know, I guess you can't make a 320-page movie. So, but, you know, I didn't want to leave anybody out. My tendency towards socialism didn't help. So I wanted to include everyone. And so, so anyway, we went back and forth, and we were kind of at an impasse on it. And it was fine, you know, there was Bob is, you know, he's a true independent filmmaker, so he's always busy hustling, you know, to get the next movie together. He remains truly independent, when in fact, you know, he gets offered other stuff that he would make him, you know, he could go to work for Enormo Corp, but he doesn't, you mm-hmm. know, so that's, you know, so I'm really happy to work with him because of that, and plus he's my old dear friend. But anyway, he's talking to Robin one day, and Robin says, you know, nobody tells Crimmins a story better than Crimmins, why don't you make a documentary? And Bob, you know, that clicked with Bob, and he called me, and I said, yeah, sure. Uh-huh. And so it started, and the call me lucky part of it is just, well, you know, I'm a child abuse survivor, and I just feel that, you know, having become a human rights activist rather than a, you know, an abuser, or, you know, dying somewhere along the way or whatever, or letting it finish me up, that I survived it and then was able to sort of do some good, make something good out of the horrible experiences in my early childhood, you know, I feel very fortunate. And so, you know, it's called me lucky. And then you just look at the movie and, you know, there I am with you and Howard Zinn and, yeah, I mean, just all these great performing talents and so many dear friends and whatever. Even before I really had dealt with what happened to me as a kid, I was fortunate to get where I was. And I also feel like, who knows if my sister hadn't sort of helped drive off the babysitter and her father who were abusing me, and if she hadn't done that, she was a little kid then too, you know, it happened a few more times. Who knows when I crossed the line and, right. you know, and beyond repair or whatever. So I just feel very fortunate. I really do. And sometimes you have to have the worst of things happen to you to really, you know, you don't. But there are times when the worst of things can happen to you and you actually... You kind of emerge from it. You're certainly a great example of that.
Well, I haven't seen the film yet. I'm going Saturday to San Francisco. Right. Apparently Charlie Fonville, the producer, is going to be there too. So that'll be right. awesome to reconnect with him. So I'm very excited to see it. But sounds like it's very inspirational.
It's gotten, story. We were an official selection at Sundance.
That's awesome.
And it got great reviews. Just, you know, great reviews. They can stop reviewing it now. We have enough for the poster. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, that's good. We're good. And we've gone on to, you know, other festivals. We were picked as the best documentary at the Boulder Film Festival, the best documentary at the Gasparilla Film Festival in Tampa, and the audience chose for the best film at the Chattanooga Film Festival. So it's going great. It really is. And also, I think it's doing some good. I'm hearing from some people and able to help some people who are, you know, could use a little shot in the arm. So, you know, everything is sort of, you know, the plan is working, so I'm a little nervous.
Right.
You know, well, this is going right. You know, what is this?
Oh my gosh, it's hard not to become cynical when you've lived such a long life having one obstacle after the other.
The movie certainly contains a lot of my activities as a political satirist, and you'll see a lot of that, and there's some laughs there and some stuff from my younger sort of maniac days too, but it's you know, there's a lot of laughs, and, you know, people get kind of choked up at it a few times, too. So, you know, it runs the gamut of emotions.
Well, by the time this show comes out on Sunday, I'll have seen it. So,
yes.
You know, I'll be able to, you know, put some additional info into the newsletter going around this show. But when I met you, it was, I think, in person at Crawford, Texas, at Camp Casey. And
sure.
You were working for Air America then for Randy Rhodes.
Right.
Talk a little bit about
right.
That wasn't such a positive experience for you. But it's something that you overcame and I think turned into something better.
You know, we got, again, the best thing we did at Air America was Camp Casey. What I wanted to do at Air America is I didn't want to be a limousine liberal sitting on Park Avenue.
Right.
Basically making fun of the rest of the country, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm from upstate New York, which is, you know, for all intents and purposes, the heartland. And you know why they call it the heartland? Because the brain isn't there.
Right.
But in any case.
If that's the heartland, then Crawford has to be like the crotch or something.
Oh,
like that.
Absolutely. The armpit of the crotch.
Yeah.
So, but I all along at Air America, I wanted us to be in America. I wanted us, if there's a steel strike somewhere, let's go cover it.
Right,
if
exactly.
If there's a nuclear reactor leaking somewhere, there's a cancer cluster, let's go do that story or whatever. And instead it was just all Democratic Party electoral talking point stuff most of the time. So when we got to go down there and do your story and really put you and all our friends from Camp Casey on the air, and it helped, you know, help build the crowd.
Absolutely.
There. It was the best thing we ever did at Air America. So it was great. And I mean, you know, not only did we get to do a great thing, but, you know, I felt vindicated.
Mm-hmm.
That's
right,
what it
for sure. Well, also, but you talk about, you know, you just like sit in the ivory tower in New York City, not really connected with the rest of the world, and literally going to Crawford, Texas, and getting down in the ditches. And
yeah.
People don't realize this. I mean, people came from all over the country to Camp Casey that
right.
summer. But most of our support, and still our main hardcore Camp Casey family, are from Texas. It's not like
yeah.
Texas is filled with stupid
right.
Republican rednecks. There's a lot
right.
of great people there.
Absolutely, absolutely, and I've always said I would much rather play, you know, like a labor union hall in Little Rock, Arkansas, than some jaded comedy club in Manhattan somewhere, you know, because it's like you get to those people, and it's like you know you're like the bad example, like the Berlin Airlift, you know, like they're cut off and you're bringing in what they need. You know, they're thrilled
right.
to get this. You've broken the embargo, you know,
right.
you got there. And then they're like, we knew this was true, you know, and they're so great. And I've been doing that throughout my career. And so I enjoyed it. I mean, one of the best shows I ever did was with Whitney Brown. Whitney Brown used to be on Saturday Night Live and a great comic who started in San Francisco.
And now he's with Caroline Wonderland, who's one of our Camp Case. She's a
yeah.
country
yeah.
western
they're
singer
married.
From Austin, who's amazing, one of our Camp Casey. I met A. Whitney in Austin the last time I was there. And
great.
Caroline was playing, she played some music for the event we did.
Well, we did, and Caroline's great, and, you know, they're just both wonderful people and so much fun to be
mm-hmm.
around. But and she's a tremendous talent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Whitney and I are uni talented. We can talk, but she needs to play guitars and a bunch of instruments and stuff. So anyway, Whitney and I are out in 2004 traveling around. Somebody gets us to do a show in Johnson City, Tennessee. And we said, it's sort of like, we're out of our way and whatever,
mm-hmm.
but they really want us. So
mm-hmm.
we say, okay. Well, we arrive in Johnson City, Tennessee. These people had made, literally, had hand-printed out tickets on gingham. And
wow.
And they were so excited. The place was sold out. And it was the greatest crowd I ever played to. When, like, we arrived, and they're like, the Canadians are here! The Canadians! And they were so excited to see us. And then we did, you know, really progressive stuff. And they ate it up. Because mm-hmm. these people, you know, I mean, they came from families of coal miners and other people who had been screwed over for a long time, you know. And just various other stuff, you know. It's just not, you know, it's not easy street in East Tennessee all the time. So they were, you know, they were terrific. It was one of the greatest shows I've ever done. And, I mean, I've played NFL stadiums. And, you know, I mean, I've been in a lot of places. And I've played to a lot of great crowds. But none better than that. So, you know, the idea of just eliminating the chance for yourself to get out and meet people like that and bring something to them and then get, and then just get this massive gift and boost back from them. That's, you know, that's how, you know, the weave becomes stronger.
Oh, absolutely. So one thing I did not know about you is that you actually testified before Congress and got some, you know, some great awareness going on about an issue. Can you talk about that?
Yeah.
I didn't know about it actually till the day I went to interview for the film.
Right. Yeah, you know, I mean, my cooperation with the government on any level is...
Yeah.
But in this case, if we're going to have cops and we're going to have, you know, laws, they should be there to protect innocence.
Right,
and,
exactly.
So, I'm on AOL. I get on AOL in 1995 like every other schmo in the world.
Uh-huh.
And I find this chat room for abuse survivors. So I go in there. Well, some of them start telling me there's these other bad chat rooms or whatever where, you know, all these child molesters are and stuff. And I think there's probably something going on. But I don't find them at first. And then they say, oh, no, you got to go to the member-created area. And then it was just astonishing what was going on. Hundreds and hundreds of people and, you know, all sorts of different chat rooms. And many of them, you would just enter the room, and people would start sending you files of child pornography. And it's that, you know, people call it kiddie porn and stuff because it fits in the headline. Kiddie porn sounds like fun, like the bunny hill or
right.
something. It's, what it is graphic images of children being sexually assaulted or exploited. And if you're consuming that kind of stuff, you're making a demand for someone to do harm to a child. So, but, you know, I went in and then immediately went to AOL and said, you know what's going on here? And, you know, it went on for months and they were just dragging their feet and whatever until I realized that what was going on was they were making a lot of money.
Oh, my goodness.
Because back in those days, you know, there's a 2.88 baud modems and whatever, you know, like wood-burning computers. So to upload one picture took half an hour or more.
Right.
And so they were charging, after you were on AOL over a certain amount of time, they were charging like $3 or $4 an hour. So there were thousands of these people, and they're all spending over, you know, like four figures a month just to be on AOL, because this is the first time child molesters have ever had a chance to at community, you
mm-hmm,
know?
Right.
So I'm in there. At first I scream at them, and they literally try to hit me with, like, First Amendment stuff. And this guy, Andrew Bach, says, well, you know, you can mug me and call it performance art, but you can't get away with it,
mm-hmm.
you know? No, it's not performance art. So, anyway, I kept trying to get AOL to do something about it. I tried to get, the cops weren't really that hip to anything then. Not that they are so hip now, but,
right.
So I really felt alone, and I spent 7 months in these chat rooms with these pedophiles compiling this information. I was forwarding stuff to AOL, as they said, and now I later realized, like, that was like sending them heroin. That stuff should have all gone to, you know, the quote-unquote proper authorities, who mm-hmm. I'm dubious about sending it to also.
Right.
But it's evident to prosecute people who are doing these crimes. You know, if we're going to have any sort of a justice system, you know, these are the kind of people I don't want them. I don't want them segregated. I don't want them treated brutally. I don't want their MO is corroborated at any level. I don't want anyone raped or beaten or anything. But I also don't want these people near children because, generally if someone's offending over the age of 21, they're probably not going to stop.
Right.
But so this goes on and on. I have all this email exchanges with AOL, and they're just, playing dicey. They're just buying time, trying to run out the clock. Well, my friend Lana Lawrence suddenly finds out they want to do this hearing in Washington. And what the hearing is going to be about is like 15-year-old boys seeing, Playboy centerfolds on their, like that. And it was, I wanted to tell them about the children in the pornography.
Right.
And so I ended up getting called in to testify before the Senate Judiciary Committee. And AOL had this real slick, pretty boy lawyer. And I look like, and I got a suit on and stuff, but I look like, marijuana grower at his arraignment. And the guy sizes me up and thinks he's going to have an easy day, but he doesn't realize he's got nightclub comic on his hands.
Right.
And so at one point he says, I just want to make it clear, AOL, we have a strict 3 strikes and you're out of policy concerning child pornography. And
oh,
said,
what?
Yeah. And you'll see the rest of the movie. But So it's pretty funny, But it's just that guy was done at that point after he did that. And part of the reason he did that, and that this isn't all shown, but, I had, it was like, if I go more than 5 minutes with a sports analogy, it's like extra innings. But it was like, I had been beating him up pretty good for 11 rounds by then, and he just lost his judgment. So he said that, and it was like, thank you. As if it's this really moral thing. You won't find anyone we've caught 4 times with child pornography.
Really?
Seriously? Jeez. So that's one of the things that's in there. And a bunch of other stuff. A bunch of other stuff. And so it's, various actions and whatever. And, I think that's actually why things went well for me at Camtasia, was because it wasn't my, first insurrection.
Right. Well, I remember, your presence there as being very settling to me, because it was, oh my God, how stressed out I was.
The only reason I was trying to come at you was to try to absorb some of that.
Right.
More
no,
than
you
anything,
did, totally did. It was really amazing, and that's what I remember about you, is just
there,
being
there
the real steady,
like,
calming presence for me,
Every day people would say, I don't think you're going to be able to get Cindy today. And then you would see me in a way of doing it. When are we doing it?
Uh-huh.
These people just kind of try to, take charge of you. And, just, you and I knew, we both knew the other person was up to good. And we, and that was that.
Right.
So, as painful as the reasons for being there, it was, there was an awful lot of joy down there. In Camp Casey. I never thought I would have so much fun, spending August with, reptiles and, outside of a, horrible president's house.
Don't forget the fire ants. Well, this is nice to be talking to you about this, because this year is the 10th anniversary of Camp Casey, and we're trying to put together a reunion in Dallas. It won't be in Crawford. I mean, Crawford wasn't the easiest place to go to anyway, but it'll be at Johnny Wolf's ranch.
No, Waco.
Yeah, really.
It's
no McClellan.
You know, when you're at a Waco for fun, you're in trouble.
Yeah, it's no McClellan, let me tell you.
That's right.
So,
you're jealous of the people that got to go to McClellan. They went to McClellan.
I know, me too. I was like, what? There's a hotel with a pool, and I'm sitting here in a tent in a ditch. What the heck's wrong with that?
Yeah.
What's wrong with this picture? And so we hope that you can come. When we get more information, we'll be disseminating all the information. We want all our family there for sure.
I'll be thrilled. I'll make every effort to get there. Cindy, I love all those people. I'm in touch with a lot of them. Barbara Cummings, right. Nick Prisbella, the kid who was the movie maker. He's grown up to be a pretty funny and, young man. Uh-huh. And he's gotten through his war experiences in one piece. And I spent a lot of time, as I've always said to me, the problem with this country is we'd rather create veterans than care for them.
Exactly.
And I live outside near Bath, New York, where they have a VA center, and that's so it gives me a chance to, do some stuff to help out some of those people, but without this sort of flag waving crap that goes along with it. Because I heat my helmet like a flag burning stove at my house. It's an excellent source of alternative energy. The thing is, it's worth a damn if you can't burn it, period. So, but in any case, I have one of my best friends here is this disabled vet named Hal, and just being able to be helpful to him pretty regularly is there's so much you get back from doing stuff like that. I've often said, there's a real generosity in the people who accept whatever acts of kindness you might do for them or whatever. And so now this film's going around. There's a bunch of people doing and saying kind things for me and saying kind things to me. And I have to remember to be generous enough to accept, those offerings.
Right.
That's one of the hardest things I've had to learn how to do, because to survive my childhood, I had PTSD, I was in shock. So that's also why I relate to veterans so much.
Right, me too, yeah.
So I was in a state of shock, in elementary school. So it's like, you miss that part of your life. It's kind of, you don't get a do-over. But you sort of do. Mm-hmm. And once I started recovering from it, I was living in Boston, and I'm a dreaded Yankee fan, and I was doing well, and I would wake up in the morning and see, hey, the Yanks have a day game today, and it was like, you want to go, kid? Yeah, so I'd take, basically my little kid self down to the Yankee Stadium, get a great seat, and enjoy the game, and then fly home, and it was just it'd be sort of never too late to have a good childhood stuff, and the other thing was, for years, I had advocated compassion and thinking in terms of people speaking for the unspoken for and whatever, and to find context for people so that you can be, loving and try and find a way to do some good. And when it came around to I needed that, I was either going to be a hypocrite or I was going to show myself the same sort of compassion. And fortunately, I found a way to show myself compassion. But still, it's tough when people are too, people are calling me, hero and stuff about this movie. And it's just like, I told the truth. Mm-hmm. I didn't, Maybe in this society that's a heroic act, but, you did too. So, it's not, in your case, it was heroic because you took on this gigantic, the biggest war machine in the history of humanity.
And we're still taking it on.
Of course.
Speaking of that, we just have a couple more minutes left, but I just want your thoughts on a potential 2016, another Bush versus Clinton race.
Well, now we're down to the two family system.
I know. That's really funny.
The problem with this election is already is, it's same as most other elections, but the big problem is someone will win.
We'll lose. No matter which one wins, we'll lose.
Yeah, absolutely. The whole two-party system, the reason we don't have a third party is because corporations don't want to write a third check.
Right.
And it kind of fits into this problem. I've been saying lately, America's number one problem is primacy. It's the desire for primacy.
Right.
So you got to be number one all the time, no matter what it is. everything is a contest. You know, performing is a contest. People watch these shows and you know, they root for and against artists. You know, and then you know, you have a two-party system, so it becomes this either or thing, and either or becomes no choice, particularly when they're owned by basically the same entities, and you have one side that makes it easy, that they seem completely nuts, so you immediately, but you know, they don't catch on, that it doesn't follow that because those people are completely nuts, that the people supposedly representing you are, you know, are saints. So there's all this dogmatic stuff that happens and so on, and all these people talk about, we need leaders. You know, I don't need leaders. I'm not an idiot. I need responsive public servants. You know, that's what I need to an informed electorate. That's what I need. But I mean, informed electorate. I think cavalcade of clowns might be more like it. So,
or yeah, I could think of worse things that they are. Well, Barry Crimmins, is there a website for your movie?
Yeah, I think it's just CallMeLuckyFilm.com. It's also on, you can find Call Me Lucky on Facebook, and you can find Call Me Lucky on Twitter, Call Me Lucky Film, at Call Me Lucky Film. And I'm on there at Crimmins, CRIMMINS.
And we'll put all those links into our newsletter.
Oh, great.
I'm, like I said, I'm really looking forward to seeing the movie, and I'm looking forward to one of these days our paths crossing again in real
life.
In real time.
Wait to see you and give you a big hug, and then go out and rouse the rabble. We'll see you again.
Hey, well, Barry Crimmins, thank you so much for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox.
My pleasure, my honor to be on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox, and I love you, and peace, everybody.
Love you, too, and peace out. Well, that was Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox for today. I hope, as always, you were informed and inspired, and I hope you go check out Call Me Lucky. Unfortunately, I didn't get to go see the film like we talked about in the interview because I had a migraine and I couldn't make the trip to San Francisco, even though it's only about 60 miles away from me. When you don't have a car and when there's no good public transportation, it really is difficult. And when you have a migraine, it's impossible. So hopefully I'll get a DVD and get to see the movie soon. So please go check it out. As always, I'd like to thank Don DeBar, my engineer, my production assistant, Dee Dee Miller. I'd like to thank Barry for his lifelong work and for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox this week. And as always, I'd like to thank you for listening and supporting the show. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Peace out for now.